This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
It comes around so fast every week. It's World Wide Wave time, Joy's international news and current affairs show, taking you around the globe one country at a time. Tonight, you've got Lana.
Hello.
Paul.
Hello.
And myself, Matt. And we're off to a country that is probably more familiar to Australians for its war with Russia and the downing of Malaysian Airlines flight MH17 than for its record on LGBT rights. Yes, tonight we are off to Ukraine.
And we ask the questions, what drives LGBTIQ hate speech from politicians in Ukraine? What are the unique challenges for LGBTIQ people who are seeking asylum? And do all human rights activists in Ukraine support LGBTIQ rights? To understand LGBTIQ life in Ukraine tonight, we are speaking with Christina, a Ukrainian lesbian and human rights activist who experienced extreme persecution for her queer activism. Christina, along with her partner, successfully sought asylum in Australia. Here's a teaser of what we have for you tonight.
I assume when there is a heterosexual couple asking for, you know, asylum on any other ground, they won't ask them, you know, how many times you have sex or something like that. So then it's a really biased attitude. So I don't think it should, you know, happen at all, because I even read some, you know, refugee tribunal reviews on people who are asking, and some of them, they will refuse just because person wouldn't go to the gay club.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
We're starting our wrap this week in the United States, specifically San Francisco, where a new proposal has come up to pay homage to one of the cultural areas of the LGBT community in San Francisco. There is a proposal to build a new mixed housing and retail development for the leather community. Yes, it is the first gay leather park.
Only in San Francisco.
In San Francisco. Basically, this park area or this development area is away from what you would call the traditional area of the gay community around the Castro and that. And so they're trying to get their bit of space, I guess, and build community around that. There are lots of gay bars in the area, and the leather scene, obviously, they're calling it a parklet.
A parklet.
It's kind of like, you know, I'm picturing, you know, big bears and that, but with a squeaky high voice, a parklet, you know. Hello. Gee, now what would you expect to see in a leather park? I'm fascinated by this. I mean, I'm picturing the swings where, you know, you hook yourself on, or the swings, but they've got like a sling in the swing.
You
the
see,
sling swing.
I don't have that kind of. I don't have the kind of imagination you do. All I can think of is hot butchers in leather jackets.
Well, maybe that's it. Maybe there is a clothing accessory store for all your bits. I'm picturing those vaulting horses.
Oh,
those
okay.
Vaulting
yep.
Horses. You know, they're all leather and that. Maybe you'd have to have cages, wouldn't you?
You could have your love of we know that you love everything cowboy. You could have your cowboy leather accessories there.
They haven't actually finalised the design. They're putting plans together now, and they're going to put this to council.
And over to India. India's anti-gay laws cause psychological damage, says the Law Commissioner. Chairman. The chairman of the Law Commission of India has slammed the country's anti-gay as discriminatory and psychologically damaging. Justice Shah made the comments yesterday in New Delhi at the launch of a book about LGBTI legal issues in the Southeast Asian country. Section 377 is discriminatory in its application, unreasonable in its intent, derives a group of its personal autonomy and violates individual privacy and human dignity, he said.
So Section 377, this is the colonial British laws, that the old sodomy laws. So they were in place until 2009. The Delhi High Court ruled that they were discriminatory and they had to be removed. So all of a sudden, overnight, gay people in India were legal. Same-sex relationships were legal. But that was overturned by the Supreme Court in 2013.
Yes.
2013. So,
Which punishes gay sex with up to life imprisonment in some places.
And this has been, this has really revved up the LGBT community in India. In fact, if you go to our webpage, you can and search for the India show, we had a fantastic interview with a group of Indian people who are campaigning for change in this area. So fascinating to watch, and interesting, I think, there to see the legal community now getting behind this and saying, look, it's actually bad policy, bad legal policy.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true.
Well, over in Ireland, could you believe it? Religious lobbying groups in Ireland are actually forming a coalition in support of same-sex marriage.
In support of?
In support of. So there's something wrong with that picture.
I know, it's not quite right, is it? But this is all around Ireland's upcoming referendum on same-sex marriage.
Yes, there's a vote in May on a proposal to legalise same-sex marriage. The referendum has overwhelming public support. The Faith in Marriage Equality group, which represents the Church of Ireland, the Catholic Voice and Changing Attitudes Ireland.
So these are all fairly inclusive churches in Ireland. If you take the equivalent here would be Metropolitan Community Church, something along those lines. So they're all getting together in support of this referendum to pass same-sex marriage.
What surprises me is the word Catholic is in there.
Indeed. Yes. Well, there are. We've spoken to the Catholic group Acceptance here in Victoria as well. I love the quote, though. Jesus was a champion of the oppressed and the minorities, and there are positive messages in our religious teaching which would argue for full inclusion and social justice. So, spot on, I say.
More likely 3 in 5 people will vote to legalise same-sex in the Republic of Ireland. That's a very high percentage.
So 62% there in favour at the moment. We will be watching that one very intently in the lead up to the referendum. Across in the US, speaking of support for gay marriage, the latest poll has seen a big, big hike in support for same-sex marriage. The 60% were previously against, but it's now shot up. So more than 50% of Americans are in support.
There we go.
And this is a bit of a seismic shift. With support, this seems to be a bit of a legacy of the Obama administration. They've really driven change in the LGBT rights issues.
Yeah. And in brief, Nepal Human Rights Committee recommends gay marriage to be legalised, another pro-gay marriage. What I find really interesting is the Shibuya district in Japan, which is regarded as a business hub, is to become the second Tokyo district to recognise gay relationships. And that is really huge because LGBTI relationships aren't recognised in Japan.
In New Zealand, the first gay man to stand for Parliament has died. Robin Duff has died at the age of 67.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
This is Douglas.
And this is Paula.
From Kaleidoscope Australia Human Rights Foundation, keeping a watchful eye on LGBTI rights across Asia and the Pacific.
On the World Wide Wave.
It's World Wide Wave, Joy's International News and Current Affairs show, and we are taking around the world and stopping off tonight in Ukraine. We did put a call out earlier. What would you expect to see in San Francisco's new leather park? Now, one of the guys in at Joy here has suggested stocks, you know, stocks where you put your head and your arms in.
Ah.
That'd be good. I think you'd have chaps in chaps too.
Oh, yeah.
And barber chairs. I don't quite get that, but you see barber chairs.
I think maybe all the leather.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe yes. They can have weddings in this park.
Maybe they can have weddings in the park. Why would they have weddings in the park? Who would get married in a a wedding in America that we know?
Well, we've had some news during the week. So Dean, who's on our show here, we had message from US where he is at the moment. So very exciting news. That
very, very exciting.
Partner Angel proposed to him and he has accepted.
Woohoo! Congratulations,
go Dean.
Dean
and Angel. We are sending long distance air kisses.
We are indeed.
And we will celebrate Julie when you get back. And we're going to kick off with some fun fast facts.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your fun fast facts.
Now, we are in Ukraine tonight, and the news is not all good, although there has been legal progress. So this is a former part of the Soviet Union, so being gay used to be banned up until 1991. And in fact, Ukraine was the first post-Soviet country that decriminalised homosexuality. So that is quite a step forward.
It is indeed, but I love your positivity because Ukraine's also been called the most homophobic country in Europe.
Yeah.
So as part of the Soviet Union, the criminal code did ban same-sex sexuality, and you're right, in 1991, it became the first post-Soviet country. In 1996, the national government revised its laws regarding gender identity to allow for, under medical approval, gender reassignment surgery and new personal identification. And
that's probably where the good news ends. Yeah. There's pretty much no anti-discrimination law coverage for sexual orientation or gender identity, and pretty much none of the political parties talk about LGBT issues at all.
None have come formally out in favour of LGBT rights, and in fact, we talk a little bit in the interview about how politicians are quite aptly able to say really quite horrible things.
Sexual orientation and transgender identity are very taboo subjects. There's a very strong influence of both Orthodox and Catholic churches within Ukraine, so homosexuality doesn't get much of a look in, always called immoral.
Yeah, and single persons who are citizens of Ukraine, regardless of sexual orientation, are allowed to adopt, but same-sex couples are explicitly banned from adoption.
And guess what? Same-sex marriage is not allowed in Ukraine.
Oh, fancy that.
In fact, it's stipulated, like our current constitution, it's stipulated that marriage is between a man and a woman. In fact, a lot of Ukrainians don't get much exposure at all to LGBT issues. So under Russian rule, things like sex education, regardless of sexuality, were pretty limited. And a bit of that has carried over. So there's not a lot spoken about with the LGBT community.
No. As a former Soviet republic, public discussion, let alone education, is prudishly restricted. Gay men are generally depicted as child molesters and sexual predators, and gay women are depicted as being mentally ill or otherwise mentally deficient.
And in fact, in 2007, a survey was taken. 81.3% of Ukrainians polled said that homosexual relations were never acceptable. Only 18% said they were. We're going to explore that more as we go through Ukraine.
Dzień dobry. I am Kylie from Poland. It's great to have a place like Joy 94.9, where we can talk about trans issues from across the globe on a worldwide wave.
We're speaking to Christina. She's a lesbian, a human rights activist who experienced extreme persecution for her LGBTIQ activism in her home country of Ukraine. Christina, along with her partner, successfully sought asylum in Australia. I asked Christina what life was like as a lesbian human rights activist and as a woman who doesn't fit into the conservative heteronormative society of Ukraine.
So when you're in a circle of human rights activists, and especially those who are for LGBT rights, for women's rights, you kind of feel right. But when you're outside of that, you know, community, so then you're not feeling absolutely right, because the society is really homophobic towards you. Society even perceives feminism as something really kind of weird and strange, and they feel threatened by it. And even sometimes we could feel, you know, the discrimination from another human rights activist who, you know, are fighting for other rights, and they don't believe that LGBT rights are the one that deserve, you know, to be protected as well.
On December 12, 1991, Ukraine became the first post-Soviet country recognized by the UN to decriminalize homosexuality. In some ways, this indicates that Ukraine was quite progressive in regards to ex-Soviet states. What has changed, or has anything changed?
It did change. when they decriminalized the homosexuality, so everyone thought it's going to be a riot, but then year by year we can see the increase of homophobia from people. And I've just recently read the research from the 2012 when they said that now 70% of the population thinks that homosexuality is really a negative thing and they're against gay people, against gay marriages.
Yeah, Ukraine has been labelled as the most homophobic country in Europe. It was traditionally part of the Soviet Union, which the former state seemed to be following Russia implementing further discriminatory marriages to LGBTI people. Why do you think that sweeping homophobic laws are being implemented in these types of countries?
They all seem to, like, you know, introducing that law, they justify that the country with traditional Christian values and homosexuality is against Christian and traditional values, in their opinion, that's against morality. And when introducing that law, they were saying that they would like to protect kids from the negative influence, from the negative information that may cause their physical and psychological harm. So they're saying that they're not against gay people, but they're protecting their kids, which is, you know, quite tricky, because how are you going to measure that, you know, physical harm to the child when the child knows what homosexuality is? But the church has really big influence, though we are a secular state, which is defined by the constitution, but the church is a right hand, so they have really huge influence on politics, on, you know, everyday life, and there's a really big input from them in that, you know, negative society attitudes.
Hola, mi nombre es Felix de Colombia. You are on World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
It's the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time, and we've stopped off in Ukraine tonight. Had a message in from Brad, who has corrected us. I am slapping myself on the wrist. Same-sex marriage is not banned in our constitution. It is banned by an amendment to the Marriage Act. It is done by an act of parliament. It has nothing to do with our constitutional rights. You are 100% right, which is a bit different in Ukraine, because they actually have it mentioned specifically in their constitution. And we've been speaking with Christina tonight about that.
Yes, I asked Christina, with limited recognition of LGBTI people in Ukraine, how the current laws impact daily life.
So basically, you know, if you live together, you share your household, you share your money and your income. So if you separate, you do not have rights for anything. Even if your, you know, partner gets into hospital, you cannot go and visit, because sometimes it's only available for family members and you're not a family member. And especially it gets really hard when you have children, because, you know, your partner has no legal rights for your your common children.
Yeah. In 1999, the former president of Ukraine, Leonid Kravchuk, stated that there are more important issues than LGBTI rights to discuss in parliament, and that homosexuality is caused by mental illness or corrupting influence of foreign films. In 2007, the leader of the Parliamentary Committee on Human Rights called gay men perverts who must be stopped. Other MPs have attempted to restrict the freedom of expression by labelling LGBT-themed publications as pornographic propaganda. Are politicians saying what the general population thinks, or are these comments by politicians aimed at reinforcing how citizens should think about LGBTI people?
That's a really good question, and I think it's kind of 50-50. It does reflect what people think, because there are a lot, like majority, like many, I can't say majority, many people, they do not understand, you know, why gay people should have any rights, and why should, you know, they all think that this influence of the Europe or the West, this is not kind of, you know, traditional Ukrainians. On the other hand, they do create that, you know, like, you should think this way, because then, you know, when they, especially all of these hate speeches, they become really active during the election times. So they try, you know, to get more votes, or they try to seem, you know, more traditional Christian values and all that sort of things. That's why, you know, they try kind of to get more votes for them.
You arrived in Australia as a refugee with your partner. Can you tell us a little bit about that process?
Yeah, so we never kind of planned this. It was a really hard decision. We just came and we basically never could go back, so we didn't know anything, what to do, where to go, you know, who to contact. And we found drugs in Sydney, and they helped us through with the, you know, we had a solicitor, so she helped to prepare all the necessary documents, because we wouldn't know even, you know, what to do and how to do that. And then we submitted that you know, packaged to the immigration, and then you go through the medical check, then you go through the interview, which is the most horrible part of the whole thing. And then normally you just wait, as you know, as long as it takes for them to take the decision.
You have reached extraordinary heights in your career working for such organisations as UNHCR and NGO for Equal Rights. You do a lot of work in the area of advocating for lesbian and bisexual women and health. Can you tell us about what your work in Australia entails?
Currently, I'm doing my PhD about LGBT asylum seekers from ex-Soviet Union countries. So I would like, you know, to investigate that topic more, because ex-Soviet Union countries, they seem to be like, you know, a separate set of countries with their separate issues and mentality, which, you know, which causes people actually to flee from those countries. Try, you know, to be active in here in terms of refugees' rights. And currently my partner, she's doing a photography project. We want to have an exhibition about the success story of refugees in order to change those perceptions about refugees in Australia, to show that people achieve success, people are, you know, beneficial members of the society. They don't like, you know, all those stereotypical things like queue jumpers and so on. So we want to, you know, kind of promote more positive things.
There are significant human rights concerns for LGBT people who seek asylum in Australia. Much has been said about the conditions of the detention centres on Manus Island, the endemic violence in PNG, and the absence of effective legal infrastructure to support refugees. However, little has been said about one important question: how do lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and intersex asylum seekers fare in a place where their identity itself is a cause for criminal sanction? Can you talk on that at all?
I was really concerned when I kind of knew that, you know, if you're arriving by boat, so you're going to be sent to PNG, that criminalizes homosexuality. And I think this is a real big issue, because we're just violating the human rights of the person, just the basic right, you know, to be who you are. And people are facing so much trauma in their countries, because when you're LGBTI asylum seeker, you're exposed to much more violence than other types of people who are seeking asylum. And then you come to another environment which is the same violent, the same homophobic towards you, because even, you know, inside the refugee community, LGBT refugees are not accepted like everyone else, because if someone has, you know, any prejudice, you know, attitude or stereotypes, you're gonna, you know, just increase that trauma and violence against people. So I think that shouldn't be happening. I do not think that any of the refugees, you know, deserve to be placed in that conditions when they're just there seeking for help and they're not getting that help. So they're all people, they all deserve, and we live in a world when there's more than 50 million of refugees. We just have to try, you know, and elaborate and create those mechanisms how to integrate them, rather than, you know, just sending them away somewhere where it's the same cruel as in their home countries.
That was Christina, a lesbian and human rights activist who experienced extreme persecution for her LGBTIQ activism in her home country of Ukraine. And
we've got a bit more coming up of Christina as well, but it really interesting. So religion, not a surprise,
not at
that
all.
That is an influence in this area.
However, what is a surprise, mainly because I hadn't thought about it too much, but in two different parts, Christina talked about how the human rights community in Ukraine didn't really support LGBTIQ rights, and then in the refugee community, not necessarily supporting LGBTIQ refugees.
So you're kind of stuck in no man's land,
yeah.
You know, looking for some support. The Kiev mayor has spoken out quite recently. So there was an attack on the showing of an LGBT film where a smoke bomb was thrown into the cinema, and there was quite a bit of panic and concern. The mayor, in responding to that, said that human rights is a good thing and he supports that, but he will not speak up for the rights of gays and lesbians.
Because we're not human.
Yeah, yeah. So there's this real disconnect in what human rights is in and how it's accepted in Ukrainian society.
Yeah, well, Christina did mention 70% of people are in Ukraine are against homosexuality and that it really is influenced by the church and by the politics there. And, you know, talking about it in terms of it's against morality, that it's about protecting children, it's about, you know, preventing physical and psychological harm to children.
It's that real hark back to what we had here in the, you know,
40s.
Yeah, 50s, 60s, even into the 70s, I guess. It seems to be there, you know, 30, 40, 50 years behind us.
Yeah, and the same thing around mental illness and corruption and pornographic propaganda. It's, you know, really quite disturbing that those narratives are still existing, and not only still existing but increasing in places like the ex-Soviet countries.
And you could also hear in her voice a lot of personal pain or fear. So she was talking about when your partner is in hospital, that the family can prohibit you from seeing them because you're not deemed family.
Right.
If you've got children, your partner has no rights to those children. It really puts a strain on a relationship if you have to protect yourself and protect your kids.
It's that really serious in the closet stuff, like really having to protect yourself by not, I think, allowing your homosexuality to show and being really careful because you are discriminated in such every way possible.
I do want to pick up on one of the things she said, because there was a discussion there that one of the politicians made mention that there were more important issues to be discussed in Parliament. Now, this is a country that is at war. They have a raft of economic issues. They've had the tragedies of the MH17 flight. Is that a fair cop? Is it something that LGBT rights should just hang off a bit until things settle down?
I don't think so, because it's, you know, even if they don't have the space and energy to deal with it in a legislative manner, to have those kinds of really strict discriminations in everyday narrative around politicians saying, no, it is not a part of human rights, you know, no, we should see it as a psychological and physical harm to people. We should see it as mental illness and corruption and pornographic propaganda. That really has nothing to do with legislation. That is about the cultural narratives around discrimination and bigotry of LGBTI people. And so I think that that's pretty crap excuse when discrimination is looking much more broadly than legislative changes.
And one of the big influences in this area is this play between the power, the influence of Russia. So when Russia brought in their anti-propaganda laws, which were pretty much anything, any mention of gay or lesbian in the country, you could be arrested. Ukraine did actually follow suit with a unanimously supported bill that brought many of their policies in line. That was in 2012, and a lot of pressure from religious groups. And there was a whole lot of silence, and then just recently in January, that was fairly quietly swept away. So they've sort of thrown out that gay propaganda bill to it's this dynamic of, are they Russian or are they Europe?
Yeah.
And the influence of Europe coming into the country, particularly in their war with Russia, seems to have swayed the laws the other way. So bringing in LGBT-friendly laws butters up the Europeans.
And that was the same kind of discussion when we spoke to the agency in what was the advertising agency?
In that part of the world.
Yeah, in that part of the world.
we do
Kazakhstan.
Cover,
Kazakhstan.
It's very hard because we've covered so many countries. I was doing a bit of a count, and we're up over 130 countries now.
That's,
I think there's about 190 countries in the world. We've got a few pretty tricky ones to track down to talk about LGBT issues, but we have done Antarctica. If we can find a poof in Antarctica and get them on the radio, we can find anywhere. If you go to our website, joy.org.au/worldwidewave, you can see all the shows, all the countries that we've been to. We have more of Christina coming up while we are in Ukraine.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
It's Roman Schlesinger from the Rainbow Pride Bratislava in Slovakia for Worldwide Wave.
Tonight, we've headed off to Ukraine, and we've been speaking to Christina, a lesbian and human rights activist who experienced extreme persecution for her LGBTIQ activism in her home country. Christina, along with her partner, successfully sought asylum in Australia. Based on her experiences as a refugee, we asked Christina about people who are seeking asylum based on persecution of sex, sexuality and gender diversity.
Just last week, European Court of Human Rights made a decision that in Europe they're not going to test whether you are real homosexual anymore. So these questions won't be, you know, asked people. So they will take it for granted that you're an LGBT person. So you don't need to prove, you don't need to participate anywhere, which is really great because I myself, I never go to party, I never go to gay clubs, you know, things like that. But it does not mean that I'm not lesbian or I'm lesbian. It has nothing to do with everyone lives the way they live because I assume when there is a heterosexual couple asking for, you know, asylum on any other ground, they won't ask them, you know, how many times you have sex or something like that. So then it's a really biased attitude. So I don't think it should, you know, happen at all, because I even read some, you know, refugee tribunal reviews on people who are asking, and some of them, they will refuse just because person wouldn't go to the gay club, which is nonsense. You know, you don't need to go to the gay club to be politically active or socially active or to be a LGBT person.
You talk about how the United Nations said that that's not a requirement anymore.
That's a European Court of Human Rights. Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that anything will change on the ground in Australia. Do you think that it will? Do you think that there will be changes, or do you think it's just token words?
It can be taken as a best practice from the Europe, you know, because you always have a place for improvement in any work you do. So they could review and they could, you know, be more sensitive to these issues, because it is really hard sometimes for people to come out for yourself, you know, to totally accept who you are. And then, you know, you're on a really stressful interview, and then you have to prove whether you're gay or not, which may, you know, put you in a more trauma. You know, you're gonna feel more of the internalized homophobia just because of those questions, because they, you know, they even may make you doubt, you know, yourself, or am I a true one or not? But where is that those, you know, criteria to be true or not true? So Australia should really, I don't know, follow those good examples and try to change things.
That's the voice of Christina, who is a lesbian asylum seeker who is now here in Australia. The European Court of Human Rights, so it has basically prohibited testing for homosexuality, which
yes,
is a good thing. How do you test for homosexuality?
Well, depending on where it is in the
songs?
World, no. And I would fail.
You'd
that.
Fail that one.
I would fail that. You know, I haven't even seen... what is the music? Oh, Eurovision. Yeah, no, I haven't even seen Eurovision.
Get out. Just hand your membership card in the desk.
We're not talking to you any longer.
Well, fine. I'll just take up the microphone and
we'll play
and talk
Eurovision
about
songs.
Serious lesbian human rights issues.
We'll play Eurovision songs every week until you learn them. it is interesting, though, because really what they're talking about is in proving that you are gay, you know, do you know where the gay nightclubs are? How often do you go there?
In some places, and traditionally it's been incredibly extreme with very invasive testing, which I would see,
which you still get in Africa,
yes, which I would see as torture and severe human rights.
This is Europe
violations.
We're talking about, though.
In Europe, they have just, you know, created essentially best practice in the world by being more, I suppose, understanding of the cultural way in which people interact. So we're culturally queer, some more than others if you watch Eurovision, but also in terms of, particularly for asylum seekers, how asylum seekers can or can't show their queerness according to what countries they're in and what's the persecution like there.
And indeed, when some people are applying for asylum, sometimes it's seen or perceived as beneficial to be gay, in that you can show you are persecuted, therefore you have a better chance of getting out and being received by another country. In other cases, and you heard there with Christina talking about her concerns or what she'd heard about, you know, if you're arriving by boat and you were gay, you could be sent somewhere where being gay is illegal.
Yes.
So it actually has the inverse effect when for asylum seekers coming into Australia.
Yes. And you know, if you recall the interview with Neil Gungress from OSRAM.
Human Rights Watch.
No, OSRAM, the only specifically LGBTIQ asylum seeker and migration international service in the world, he was talking about some of the tricky things about, you know, being in detention centres, in community centres, the kinds of issues that arise with trans people, with people who are gay or bisexual, and what that means being placed in those kind of spaces, and the kind of discrimination that you can occur. So it's a lot harder to get asylum based on sexuality. It's a lot easier based on gender identity, so trans, but different kinds of challenges and discriminations.
We love exploring these issues from all around the world, and as we have done here tonight in Ukraine, and we'll come back with a bit more.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
Hi, this is Janne, Mr. Gay Finland, and you are listening on the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
It is the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. Tonight, we stopped off in Ukraine for a fascinating insight from somebody who got out. So a big thank you to our interview with Christina, who is a lesbian and human rights activist who has escaped persecution in that country.
And we want to also do a big thank you to Miffy, Sayad, Terry, Patrick and Liz, who have joined or interacted with us on Facebook this past week.
And Brad for the SMS too. Thanks, Brad, for yes, correcting us and keeping us in line here. This is an inclusive show. We love hearing from people.
And we'd like to say congratulations again to Dean and Angel.
Yes.
Yay!
We're assuming they're listening over there in the US.
I'm sure they will. It's only like 4 a.m. or something. big congratulations on their engagement.
Yeah, and don't forget to like us on Facebook, W3Joy.
To Gordon. Gordon's on the front desk here every week. 1300 Joy 949. Thanks, Gordon, for being here with us. It's World Wide Wave. We'll catch you next week on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.